Welcome to Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Crystal Starr. This show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Today, Colette LaBeouf talks with Allison Bennis-White about her most recent book of poems, The Wendies, a book that focuses on five Wendies, both persons and characters, as a way to talk about another Wendy, the speaker's mother. The Wendies are Wendy O. Williams, Wendy Given, Wendy Torrance, Wendy Cofield, and finally, Wendy Darling of the famed Peter Pan. Allison begins by telling us how the idea for the book emerged.
My mother wrote a memoir, and she sent me the manuscript, and two things emerged from this manuscript. One was that in this entire memoir, which is more of an autobiography, frankly, okay. I was one paragraph of this. And yeah, so that was disturbing. But also one of the stories in this memoir as a story I knew, of course, which is my mother. She was born Trudy. Her mother named her Trudy, but then her father died and her mother remarried, and this man wanted to formally adopt her, and she didn't want that. So they bribed her. They said, you're going to get a new birth certificate, and so you can choose a different first name, because they knew she hated her name. So my mom was a girl, you know, maybe 10 and 11. And so she chose the name Wendy because of Peter Pan. She loved Peter Pan, and she had younger brothers and sort of identified with Wendy. So my husband, actually, Steve, I was telling him about this memoir once I had read it. And he said, did she do anything with the story of Wendy, the relationship between that and Peter Pan? Like, was that threaded through the memoir? And I said, no. I mean, this is her first foray into writing. I said, I don't think, you know, she has the ability maybe to do that, or would think to do that. But then I thought, oh, but I could. I could do that. So sort of those two things, me being this paragraph and the lack of pulling that story of Wendy Darling through her memoir sort of, yes, sparked that interest in me to do that. So I started the Wendy Darling poems, and then and thinking maybe this would be a book, because I like to write book length, but it wasn't. I knew very early that it wasn't. And so then I knew it would only be like 10 pages. So then I started thinking about different Wendys, other Wendys that maybe I could also enter into, I guess, work through or explore or interrogate this relationship with my mother, which is a very strange and challenging relationship. Mm-hmm. So,
And one that you have investigated in other ways, in other work.
Absolutely. Yes. My first book was also kind of a slanted investigation of her absence. She's been absent for the majority of my life. And yes, so my first book, I used Degas, his paintings, sketches, and sculptures, right, in order to sort of find a way into that material. And so this is my fourth book, and it's sort of interesting. It's like, oh, I'm still trying to find a way into that material.
But totally different.
Yes.
How did you settle on these other Wendys? I'm super curious, because I'm sure there were competitors for
yes.
for material.
That's exactly right. Well, I found them in various ways. I don't know if I can remember the order, but I remember talking to my husband, and he's like, well, what about Wendy O. Williams? I'm like, I didn't even know Wendy O. Williams. And he's like, what about Wendy Torrance from The Shining? So he gave me those two, like, off that, like, as far as notable Wendys or Wendys I could discover. And I think I wrote the Wendy O. Williams poems next. I really investigated who she was, and I looked at her song lyrics, and then I found her suicide note, and that was what led me into being able to write some poems in response to her, because I found her lyrics I did not find inspiring, and her whole aesthetic was just shocking to me. I was interested, and I remember her from being a teenager. I do remember, like, these music videos, But anyway, it was her suicide note that I found infinitely tender, and her experience at the end of her life. So anyway, so I was able to write those, and I thought, oh, this could work. You know, like I was able to write the Wendy Darling poems, and I wrote these Wendy O. Williams poems, and they surprised me, which is always what I'm looking for as a writer. Like I want to be surprised. I want to have that experience of discovery. I'm not starting with any agenda except for my own sense of finding an intersection, you know, between us and a way to have a conversation. And then I read The Shining. I had experienced it with it before, but I read it for Wendy Torrance, you know, and I found that moment also. I found a moment of vulnerability, a moment of violence, a moment of survival. And somehow that I was able to enter into. And I sort of on my own found Wendy Caulfield. And then Wendy Gibbon, that was that's my favorite little gift, is I went to an art opening with Lorene Delaney Ullman, which is our mutual friend. And I was talking to this contemporary artist there. And I said, do you know any other contemporary artists named Wendy? Because I wanted to find a visual artist. And I had tried, there was this other Wendy Arden, I believe was her last name. I had really tried to intersect with her work, and I just found it. I just couldn't, you know, the work didn't come, even though I thought her sketches were beautiful. And so she said, there's this photographer, Wendy Gibbon. And I looked her up, and I found this series of photographs, and they were just so stark. So I was just able to intersect with her in that way. The one real failure, I'll tell you this, was Wendy Wasserstein, who's a playwright who wrote the Heidi Chronicles. And I read everything she's written. And I read this huge biography on her. I mean, I read and I just could not find a way in, even though I really enjoyed learning about her. Work. And she's really, really good, and it's like a fascinating woman. But that was like my most spectacular failure, in that I put a lot of energy into trying to find a way in with her, and couldn't, at least on the page in that way. But it wasn't as arduous as I thought. I was pleasantly surprised. Well, and also I'm tenacious and I'm patient, so you know I was going to find my Wendy's.
Right. So interesting about Wendy Gibbon, whose work I didn't know. And one thing I really liked about the way that you opened onto that section was you didn't give the title of the series of works in the section. It was in the notes, but I really, when I started reading the sections, I said, you know, I need to see this woman's work. Mm. As a reader, I felt like I had to do my homework. Mm. And I found the section. And I was so excited to see those images that I knew you were looking at. Mm. I mean, the way it worked, you must have felt like you hit the jackpot.
Oh, absolutely. I did. Absolutely. And you know, it's funny because you mentioned that I wasn't very generous with the reader in that way, that I didn't mention it.
I liked that.
Oh, okay. Well, I felt like I wanted to lead the reader there to look at her photographs.
Yes.
But instead, I just did this epigraph that was a description of this series from the website. They were called Of Myth and Magic. And I thought that language for me didn't set up the section, you know, in the way that I had entered into the work. So, but I'm so glad that you were able to find those because I think another person that I'm close to that had read the book also said, oh, like when I saw the photographs, you know, that was exciting and deepened the work.
Totally deepened the work. And one thing that really struck me, and I wrote it down, was the picture, the photograph that's called I Am Not Waving, which is just the water. Yes. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's amazing, because all of this, the undertone, sorry, of suicide kind of running through and grief and suffering. I just thought, just the way that you were beginning to, with the visual, add another layer.
No, I love working ekphrastically like that. I think just looking at something visual and finding a way not to provide language for the image, but just to use language in response to the image and conversation with the image. I find that incredibly centering and evocative, like as a writer, which is, it's like, I mean, if I could do anything else, I would sing, but I can't sing. And if I couldn't sing, which I can't, I would be a visual artist, but I'm not a good visual artist either. And so, but I have language. And so I can sort of be in the company of those gorgeous photographs. And mm-hmm. yes, and the undertones of suicide, the other theme of this book sort of running through the suicide theme. My friend Nicole had committed suicide a number of years ago. And then there was a suicide contagion that I witnessed, and that's sort of my other books are circling around that. So it was yes. interesting that in sort of writing with the consciousness that I'm working with this charged name, this name Wendy, but also like filtering through that complex grief in response to my mother are the other griefs, you know. But also interestingly, it was like I was able to understand how those griefs are so deeply connected and are talking to each other, you mm-hmm. know, as well. And so in that the section with Wendy Gibbons' photographs, that was, I really felt like the wave crashing of the suicide loss, you know, like most directly for me in that section. Mm-hmm. And that was, I felt like in lineating, I'm lineating. That was, you know, I've written these prose poems for yes. so long, and those were my first lineated poems in a long time. And it was exciting to remember what the line can do in that way. But somehow, even though I'd written about this friend that died by suicide before, somehow in breaking the lines, I was able to get to a different place. And that yeah. was rewarding.
That was Allison Bennis-White talking with Colette LaBeouf. More from them when we come back. Stay with us.
Sumane defalko bilep bahe yaula don bis mersin yamadon topoto yai boy bima sonne yamadon digel bima rere mersin gerem nana yamadon topoto yayu ala bima sonne yamadon digel bima rere Yamadon topoto genjor bima sonne yamadon digel bima rere deug deug gërem na fatouma la nabatuma man mala sendo mje kila dan topoto so mane defal ko lepp baxé yow la don merci yama don topoto genjor bima sonné yama don digel abima rere merci geureum na la yama don topoto yayu ande bima sonné yama don digel bima rere merci yayu ala yama don topoto genjor bima sonné yama don digel bima rere merci merci beaucoup yama don topoto jaral nga ma ma jay sa ma dole wa 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 gudeug gërem na fatouma Nabotuma lemon Malasendo killer than pompo. So mané defal ko lepp baxé yow la don merci yama don pompo giño bima sonné yama don digël bima réré merci yama yama don pompo yaay bo bima sonné yama don digël bima réré merci yama yama don pompo Jaral ngama ma jay sa ma tole wa 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 Fatouma la Fatouma la man man la sendong.
Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. Colette LaBeouf continues her conversation with Alison Bennis White. Her most recent book of poems, The Wendy's, was published in March by Four Way Books. Let's hear how White settled on these particular women, real and imagined, and how the sections of the book form a conversation between historical and fictional characters and the speaker.
One thing that really struck me, the order kind of that these sections were written in as, or how they came together as a book, because they really feel so much like they're talking to each other. It's like this, these layers of conversation as well. You're talking, you speaker talking to and about these characters or women, and yet these stories are also relating to each other in a way that opens onto other things.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. A friend that this had read it. It's funny I keep talking about this friend because we've been in this pandemic. It's like this book came out, I think it's March 2nd was 2020 was its publication date. So it's like, I've had so little conversation about this book. I've had the luxury with previous books of being able to experience reviews and go do readings and like have conversations, you know, about this is really nice. So thank you. You know, by the way, like just, you know, you're like one of
you.
My favorite, well, you're one of my favorite readers, you know, like I've always so appreciated your ability to read and articulate, and so I always feel like it's such a gift to have your eyes and your mind on my work, you know, so this is like very, very special. Thank you. But this friend, only person who's read this book, or that's what it feels like, oh my gosh,
my reader.
Exactly, my reader, which is probably as a poet how one thinks, you know, of, I do think about that. I do think of like a reader when I'm writing. I don't think about the nation, you know, or even like the luxury of the fiction writer to think about like, yeah, like a stadium in some way. But that's also what I love about poetry. That's what I've always loved about it. It always felt like a single voice speaking into my ear, you know, and of course that's reflected in the market, you know, but that's okay. It's like, I'll take it, you know.
Exactly.
But this person, my reader besides you, she said as she read each section that the previous Wendy would come along into the second section and
yes.
then the Wendy's would come along into the yes. third section, and that there's this gathering, you know, that happens like by the end. And I thought that was so beautiful and such a such an astute way to describe how they collect, you know, mm-hmm. and how they intersect and you know, and I think that's part of like the job of the poet, or at least something I enjoy, is like, yes, putting things next to each other and just seeing what happens, hoping something will happen. And if it doesn't happen, well, you know, you move along. But like, I suppose that's also the journey of like finding the Wendy's too. It's like just seeing what sticks, you know, like seeing what hooks. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so I'm glad also to hear that the feeling that you got from reading it was also just how they're gathering, you know.
Yes, I think it's pretty powerful as accreting, you know, and just this building of the stories behind each other. I love that. You know, one of the things, of course, that really struck me is that each section is formally so different from the rest. And so I know this is a hard question to answer, but how did you decide on the form that was right for each Wendy or each narrative?
Yeah, no, it's such a good question. And I think that word decide, you know, suggests something that maybe, like, maybe isn't true, right? Like, seeing what works. I mean, I feel like some of it seemed really obvious somehow to me, although again, the logic of that word obvious, I don't know if that's quite right either. I guess I can start with, I started with the Wendy Darlings and pieces, and I don't recall consciously why they were shattered, but somehow I think usually my process is I start moving things around the page. I knew what I didn't want. I think form is very emotional. And I think that that's how I come to form there's a certain feeling that the form is either capturing or advancing. And so I knew that these poems could not be prose poems in the way I'd written them before, like in like more traditional boxy paragraphs. I knew I couldn't do the mono stick, the one line, the more sort of austere kind of prose poems that I'd utilized in my previous book. I couldn't use them anymore. So it's like almost like I'd used up forms already and I was trying to find new forms, you know, and also to try to shake something loose, you know, to find a different part of the voice. So I think I recall just messing around essentially with the lines and then writing this first one. This was the first one, which is the first one in the series. And it feeling like exactly shattered and slanted enough for the emotion that I experienced in response to this one slice of the Peter Pan story, you know, the Wendy Darling being shot. I had no idea she was shot.
I didn't know this.
Yes, nor did I. I went and read the novel proper and I was like, what now? That as she's flying into Neverland, she is shot by one of the Lost Boys at the behest of Tinkerbell, because Tinkerbell, I think, is just experiencing like some jealousy, and she says, "Oh, it's a certain kind of bird." Like she misidentifies Wendy as a certain kind of bird in order to encourage one of the Lost Boys to shoot her down, which he does, and the arrow pierces her chest, and she falls, and they think she's dead, and they gather around her and discuss what to do with her body. So as a moment of just bizarre discovery, but anyway, the poems, I felt the form collected sort of the experience of violence, the experience of wonder, and the dissonance, I guess, of how strange that is that they think she's dead and she's not dead. And I think that frankly articulates my relationship with my mother emotionally, if not literally, right?
Right.
And so, So somehow the form, you know, there's a mystery to that. And then the rest of them sort of worked in that way too. It's like, how do I discover what is the right container for this feeling and what, like I said, can advance it, you know, like how I can... It's like, it's almost like a tool, like a certain kind of shovel or something. It's like, I can dig in this terrain with this shovel, you know,
form,
I guess, functions in that way.
So that's interesting. So a couple of things I'm thinking about: the beginning, the first section with the epistolary sort of form as well, with the dear W, and the repetition of that in that section also kind of has a way of just introducing the reader to what's happening, you know, dear W again, here's more. I know. I love that. I love that because it's not the same. And yet there's the refrain.
Yes. Because there is no response.
Yeah. Because.
Yes.
Thank you.
Alison Bennis White reading from her fourth book of poems, The Wendys. The poems begin with a section titled O. Williams, for Wendy O. Williams, the lead singer of the punk rock band Plasmatics. White starts off by reading the epigraph to the section, which is from the suicide note of Williams.
For me, much of the world makes no sense, but my feelings about what I am doing ring loud and clear to an inner ear and a place where there is no self, only Kongs. Dear W, my mind will not cool. A constellation of cigarettes in the dark. To blow a ring inside a larger ring was once a language, a lyric. You sang, take me across the universe. A boat made of paper gliding on black ice, but you have already sailed without me. Dear W, the desire for calm especially, my hand curled around a star made of wood. When cornered or held down, the body shakes to release energy. Another way to explain this sentence, a torn red dress in the snow, a voice bleeding through a dream. Dear W, for a fever on my tongue, another ice cube. Unable to sleep, I drove toward the mountains until the sky was cold and feathered, pressing down. This is the ghost of the sickness. I am numb, lying on my back tonight humming, God hung from the ceiling like a chandelier.
That was Alison Bennis White reading from her most recent book of poetry, The Wendys, which was published by Four Way Books in March 2020. White's other books include Please Bury Me in This, Small Porcelain Head, and Self-Portrait with Crayon.
Tous len tabaku ko mbay filam daay mo ko jago Ababakar Ababakar mbay si Malik Khalifa ya dabanya Almami suma yalla sama baye demna almami suma yalla baye gagne sayna almami suma yalla baye ante demna almami suma yalla baye gagne sayna almami suma yalla sama baye demna Alman suma yalla bayu njanya sayna la dit bu kumi ji man wayna rokay chandum moy sa yaay bu ma wayna ali ñang moy sa bay man wayna ya bëgg sëriñ ba wësi maay bayisi bayisi bay Bay si Malik Khalifa ya Daban ya Chopati sambayna duara sambayna Farami sel sambayna chopati sambayna duare 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 sambayna Farami sel sambayna chopati sambayna man all the sambaina. But I miss all the sambaina. Drop at the sambaina. All the sambaina. But I miss all the sambaina.
That was Cy Malik, a song from Case Code, a band born in Paris, France, from the encounter of local and emigrated musicians. Next, Colette LaBeouf continues the conversation with Allison Bennis White. They talk about Wendy Torrance, the central female character in Stephen King's The Shining, and how the pace and structure of Allison's lines almost mirrors the panic and anxiety of a scene from King's novel.
That moment... In that book was just that slow motion chase up the stairs. And what I didn't know, having seen the movie but not having read the novel, at least in quite a long time, was just like, it's like that's, oh, I didn't realize that she had put a knife in his back and he's had bludgeoned her, you know, with I think a croquet mallet, some sort of mallet, but that they have the slow motion chase up those stairs. I mean, I didn't, you know, of course it's very different in the film. I mean, but this was much more terrifying to me because of the slow motion of it. And I think it's of being haunted. I recall too, when I was going to read the book, I decided, okay, I'm going to read or reread, because it's been many years, The Shining. And I wrote on Facebook, I said, I'm going to read The Shining. How scared should I be? And someone wrote, all the scared.
Yep.
And actually, someone else, which was my editor, Martha Rhodes, she wrote, when I read that book, I was so scared. I had to remove it from my bedroom. I couldn't have it in my bedroom at night. And that's really what began this piece, was like the idea of like, oh, the person actually physically dealing with the book, like as object, you know, as the source of this terror. So I hear this piece so loudly in my ear, but I was trying to articulate that, you know, through this form and through the slashes and through like the different voices, the pleas, the begging, the demands, you know, like this is something for me that was very unique in my writing experience, where the idea that the these different kind of voices were crashing together, and the breathlessness of it, you know, was something that was new for me as well.
I could see that. I mean, I that was something I immediately noticed, was that this was different for me than the voice that I'm hearing of you reading to me.
Right, exactly.
As I read it, it was really different and just very powerful there.
That was Allison Bennis White talking with Colette LaBeouf. More from their conversation when we come back. But first, here's more music from Case Code.
Listen, you're a lie, man, a man. La 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 la, listen, you're a lie, man, a man. You're a lie, man, a man. Get out of my life, you do, Falayero, you're a lie, man, a man. Yay gërëm nama bay gërëm ni rek lay manamel dëgg la cry of love to go la yaro la may de la fekk ba xalé yi ma bëgg mag ñëpp ñoma faal bay si se jama I
Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. Colette LaBeouf has been talking with Allison Bennis White. Allison is an associate professor in the Department of Creative Writing at the University of California, Riverside. Next, she shares with us her writing process, the questions and exploration it entails, and how living on the inside of a manuscript or book project is a kind of companionship.
I'm always hopeful, you know, that there will be a transformation, that I will come to something, you know, mm-hmm. and all of it sort of isn't, I suppose, to go back to that digging analogy, you know, you're just hoping you hit something. And that last part, like, what is a book to survive? You know, like, I was like, okay. Like, but it was also telling me what I was doing by writing a book, you know, mm-hmm. like, to me, this section, and that's why I put it in the middle, it's a conversation with myself about the act of sort of going into this violent space and what the purpose of that is, you know, like what is book writing? Like, what am I after here? You know? And it's like, it's to survive. It's like, I'm surviving my life via bookmaking, but of course book reading as well, you know, I mean, but I right. think that, in other words, I just remember in the creation of this, like when I got to that last section and I was able to articulate that, I thought, okay, this works, you know, like it works because it collects into something that was surprised me anyway. So that what is a book, you know, is me asking, like, what am I doing? And what am I doing again? Like, right? Like, what is madness of writing, you know, and trying to make a book? Especially like as a young writer, it's like all I wanted was to write a book. Like, I didn't think about writing books, plural. Like, it was like, this is astonishing that I'm still like capable of doing this. But that question of like, what am I after, you know, in this obsession to write a book, and what is reading mean to me?
So this is a little bit of a digression, but I'm curious, do you still experience, as a writer, writing poems that are independent from a book project that you're working on? Or do you feel like once you have a project, that's it, and a manuscript? Or can poems stand outside manuscripts for you?
That's a good question. I've been asking myself the same question. Can poems stand outside manuscripts for me? Like, can I write just individual poems? And it's like, I think that the answer is that not yet, I guess, is probably my answer, but I'm trying to like write right now. And I find again, being attracted to the idea of like, what can I continue? I mean, initially I fell in love with individual poems as a young person, but then I fell in love with books like The Wild Iris, or of course, Killarney Clary's Who Whispered Near Me, which we share that obsession. And it's like, I want to go there. I want to do that. So.
Right. So that's so interesting, because you want to go there and stay there, which I totally understand, has nothing to do with writing a poem.
No.
It's about being inside whatever it is.
Tone, a world. And in its company for me too, I realized, I remember asking Jim McMichael, who also writes book length, or has written book length poems, why do you do that? And he said something, and I'm sure this is not accurate for the exchange, but he said, because I like to keep going, like I don't want to end. And it was just such, like, it's like, oh well, yeah, of course, just to keep unraveling it, like, is more pleasurable than ending it, like in terms of the individual piece. And it was just so simple, but I thought, yeah, I don't want to end either. It's also, I really, really enjoy the experience, like I said, they have company, that of like looking at something at Craftic or these other Wendy's, but also that the poems keep each other company, that I don't have to start all over again, like a singularly, like I really enjoy gathering. And like, yeah, and being in a room for a long time, that it's my greatest pleasure mm-hmm. as a person who writes. I'm sort of, my philosophy right now in making, which is always the truth, but it feels louder, is like, do what pleases you. Like, and this is what pleases me most, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going to continue to lean into. Now, the ability to do it is a whole other thing, right? Thank you.
joke wa wie Simba yeah go awulo. Oh, everybody say Simba wanzi 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 yobo wasaki ele malikefi na wali Simba wanzi 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 wase ate kwaso jembie jolie jolie Simba wanzi 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 yobo wasaki ele malikefi na wali Simba wanzi 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 wase ate kwaso jembie jolie jolie Simba
Simba my father sama josa ni ma moy simba buñu simba kal dem na ci gayn ñaay jappal may sa yaay ba nga japp may sa baay buru di gayn ñaay yal gayn ñaay alla bi ya ko moone yusuf yusuf simba 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 yusuf yusuf simba simba yusuf yusuf simba simba Simba, Simba,
Simba, e joke wa vie. Simba, yeah, go a wulo. Oh, everybody say Simba, wanzi, 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 wanzi. Yobo wasaki, ele malikefi na wali. Simba, wanzi, 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 wanzi. Wase ati kwaso, jembie jolie, jolie Simba wanzi, 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 wanzi Yobu wasaki, ile malikevi na wali Simba wanzi, 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 wanzi Wase ati kwaso, jembie jolie, jolie
Simba njai genja Jappal may sayay ba nga japp may sa bay foro di ngay Allah bi akuma yag nga ma tegal kana ki du yo ma melona
That was Case Code, a diverse group of musicians out of Paris, France. Let's continue with Alison Bennis-White as she shares more about what inspired her book of poetry, The Wendy's, and the creative process of using her own story and her portrayal of the five Wendy's.
After I had written the manuscript, I then think about a reader, and I think a reader would say why, and actually kind of goes back to, I was talking to Katie Ford, my colleague at UC Riverside. I was talking to her about this work and like long ago, and I said, And she said, what's it called? And I said, it's the Wendy's. And she goes, does it have to be Wendy? Like, does that have to be the name? It's like, right, right. Like, it's, you know, because just it didn't sound beautiful to her. Uh-huh. There were other names, you know, that would be more evocative. And it's like, oh, no. It's like, this is my mother's name is Wendy. And so this has this charge, you know. So in other words, that the reader would say, why? Like, why the Wendy's? You know, what is this writer doing? Like, what's the attachment? So I felt like I had to have some sort of, or not had to, but like I was conscious of that. And so that in memory of my mother, comma, W, like I thought would be a way to position the reader to understand that the writer mother is W, is Wendy, and she is gone. Mm-hmm. She is only memory. Right. And so, but of course that is a colloquialism that we use all the time that suggests asserts that the person is deceased. Mm-hmm. And so I felt, I had a certain amount of discomfort with that because my mother is still alive and because I didn't want to hurt her feelings, suggesting that I've written a book that says you're dead. Yet I came to understand that if I could hurt her feelings, I would not have written this book. That's part of the problem. So there's interesting circularity of like wanting to say something to the reader, but also not wanting to injure, and at the same time that injury is impossible. So it's like that's what I was circling around, and that this thing that is death is not physical death, but is something much more complicated, like a much more complicated kind of death. So, but my ultimate discomfort was about her as an individual.
Right. I mean, you know, once you read the book, the phrase is so powerful, you know, just the need for a recollection that you can't have or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are two little anecdotes too, that, sort of, I think feed into that. One is, you know, my mother, you know, she left when I was about a year, between years, a year and year and a half, disappeared. We didn't know where she was for years and years and years. And then she called at one point when I was, just before I was 8. And then one can imagine what came from that. But those sort of foundational years of my life, it's like there was no discussion of her in my house, by the way. There was nothing, like there was no... I knew she was not physically dead on some level, but I did not know where she was. And all I had was photo albums and my baby book, you know, and so I would look through that all the time. She seemed like a very nice woman based on the baby book. She was very pretty and I knew her name was Wendy and she seemed to be taking care of me. So, you know, there was a lot of... I don't even know how to articulate that, but like, I mean that, but that's the water that I swam in. But I remember one of my early memories is being like 5 and a kid saying to me on the playground, where's your mother? And I said, she's dead. And I, you know, and I, that was language that I had, is she's dead. And that shut him up. Right. And moving along, you know? So I think it's also leaning into exactly, as you say, in memory of like, a way to quickly speak to the biographical conflict of the writer / speaker, but also like as I'm rambling on telling all of these details, it's like the impossibly strange and complex like biographical experience that I've had and the human being that I've become, you know, in response to that, like and trying to be a writer and like make these things. So it's like the book is the story, you know, however sublimated it is. It's the emotional story.
Right.
The psychological story, you know, of this absence.
That was Allison Bennis-White talking with Colette LaBeouf about her most recent book, The Wendy's. The TCA Radio Hour is brought to you in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities Exploring the Human Endeavor and by our local business partner, Rio Grande Orthodontics. And thank you to KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truthhouseradio.com. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed by this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Crystal Starr, and this has been the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. Make it a great day.
Mamba, I tell her, this is my kundalini.